Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. Juno Afternoon is made possible with support from Sentinel Coffee, serving Southeast with locally roasted organic coffee and door-to-door delivery. More at sentinelcoffee.com. And with me now is representatives from the Southeast Alaska Watershed from UAA and Dr. Gary Lorson. Dr. Lorson, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having us.
And you are someone who specializes in fungus and mushrooms.
I am.
Tell me a little bit about that, and then we'll talk about how the Juno Watershed Project got involved in bringing you and some of the things that are going to be happening here. But how did you first and foremost get involved and interested in fungus and mushrooms?
It's been 53 years ago, Andy. In 1968, I had the opportunity to take a class from a world-renowned mycologist, Orson K. Miller, Jr., who later became my master's advisor and my PhD advisor. And we had such a great time together, and he received funding to come to Alaska to start a project. Couldn't come because he had to go back to Montana and teach. Asked me to come up and start the project. So in 71, I was introduced to Alaska. I have never left.
All right.
Except for we did go for about 2.5 years. When the university brought me on, they brought me to the Naval Arctic Research Laboratory in Barrow, Utqiagvik. We were there for 4 years, and then the Department of Defense asked my family and I to come back to Washington, D.C., where they like to pick brains of institutional folk like myself and then send us back brain dead back to our universities,
right.
Which was really a lot of fun, I must admit. Offered to have us stay, but we decided that Washington, D.C. was not where we wanted to live because we hadn't seen much of Alaska. So we came back to Alaska and settled in Fairbanks with the university there and have been there since 1982.
Well, that's awesome. And what keeps you involved and interested every single day about mushrooms? What is it about researching them? And
it's just so much fun, Andy. My specialty is circumpolar Arctic. So I've been all around the world in the Arctic, circumpolar subarctic. I've been around a good deal with the world subarctic. There are sections in central Russia and central Canada that I've not visited. And then circumpolar sub-Antarctic island archipelago in the southern oceans between the continents. So I'm kind of bipolar.
Wow,
flip-flop, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
that experience has really allowed me to study, understand, and describe a lot of new species from these high-latitude environments around the world. And I love teaching about all of this. And so during the summertime, from mid-July until end of September, I'm literally all over the state of Alaska visiting most of our satellite campuses, teaching 3 to 5 day courses in mushrooms of the local areas that I visit. And so I've been able to see a lot of Alaska. And people have asked about books and getting this stuff out so other people could use it. And the only way I could rationalize it was to break our beautiful state into 6 provinces or geographical regions. And so I started with the interior because obviously that's where I spent most of my time with the university. So we got a book out on the interior fungi. And now we're working on a book with from the Arctic, South Central, and Southeast. Yes, we'll have a book on Southeastern Alaska fungi in about a year. Mm. And then we've got Northwest and Southwest left to do. But I'm still doing a little bit of work. I mean, opportunities like this are beautiful for me and for Kristen, who comes down and helps me with all this process, to learn a little bit more about what's here. And we photograph, describe, and take stuff back. And these pictures will be in our books. But what's really important, Andy, is that there are a lot of people out there who have a lot of interest in mushrooms in general because they walk into the woods and they see them. Mm-hmm. And we want to encourage people to take photographs. I'll give anybody who wants it my email address, and they can send me pictures. I'll give them my cell phone number. They can text me with pictures, and I'll help people identify the fungi that they're finding. Because when I do that, sure, it takes time. But I've seen some mushrooms I've never seen before that other people are seeing.
Yeah.
It really adds to our collection of information for these various regions of Alaska.
And Kristen Swearingen is here, and that you work with Dr. Lorson on fungi and mushrooms. Tell me about your kind of the way you've gotten involved mm-hmm. in that, interested in it, and then you're assisting with the book as well, and kind of assisting with categorizing and figuring out all that stuff. Is that?
Yeah. So yeah. I'm Dr. Larson's TA, and I've been helping with his courses for the past 4 years. So we met when I was a graduate student at UAF, and we're good friends now. So this is my first time in Juneau, and I've been interested in mycology ever since I was about six. So I've been mostly self-taught, and Dr. Larson has taught me a lot about identification. So now I live in Anchorage, and I teach mushroom identification classes there. I really love it. What's most interesting is the new species that could be discovered. And one thing I want to start here is help contribute to the North American Mycoflora Project in South Central Alaska. So I'm wearing this little pin here. It shows a sort of a mushroom with a long stalk and a vine that are sort of interconnecting in a double helix, making that like DNA shape. That's the logo for the North American Mycoflora Project, whose aim is to document and describe every mushroom in North America.
Wow,
Alaska is kind
cool.
of a blank spot on their map. So Larson's books are really like describing most mushrooms in Alaska, I think. So, you know, Alaska's Mushrooms has come out, but there's still a whole lot of work to do, and
wow.
I want to help with that.
And really kind of baseline data in a way, or some of that first really academic look at categorizing what's here.
Yeah, because there's so much research now that's going into ecology and what mushrooms can do in the environment. Lots of really exciting applications, but you can't do any of that research if you don't know what's there. You
mm-hmm.
need to have that original material to work with.
And we should just interview. I want to also introduce Jennifer New, who's with the Southeast Alaska Watershed Coalition, and you've brought the doctor into town, is that right, to kind of talk a little bit about this and tell me about what you've got planned?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So I'm with the Southeast Alaska Watershed Coalition. We have our science program that does water quality monitoring as well as salmon habitat restoration. We also have our local food program that promotes local food entrepreneurs and also really connecting people to the wild food resources that we have in our forests. And part of bringing Dr. Larson in is just to have just to really build on the excitement for all the wonderful wild foods that we've got in our forests and just really connecting people to that. So,
well, let me ask you about that. When I think about mushrooms in the forest, and I was just telling as we were just about to go on air, I was saying a friend of mine had just picked chanterelles and mm-hmm. I'd gotten to eat them and they were delicious. I think about foraging them, but they must also be a vital part of the ecosystem as far as animals eating them, as far as an interconnection between other fauna and flora and that sort of thing. Tell me about that connection.
Well, Andy, there wouldn't be a single tree here in Alaska if it weren't for the fungus root relationship. We call them mycorrhizae. And there are so many fungal species that are associated with these trees that represent arboreal forest that without the fungi, we wouldn't have the trees. So they're really important. And this relationship is a mutualistic relationship, symbiosis, if you will, because the mushroom is bringing nutrients, amino acids, and things from soil, liquid within the soil to the plant. The plant is sucking that up into its upper frame and photosynthesizing, sending sugars back down to the roots to feed their roots. Roots are leaking, and of course, the fungi just suck the sugar up because they love sugar. So that relationship is so very important. So 99.9% of the plants around here all have mycorrhizal associations.
Mm. Wow. And then are there animals that take advantage of the edible mushrooms that are in our ecosystem?
There are. And many of the squirrels take advantage of our truffles. We have at least 22 species.
We have truffles here.
We have.
Wow.
Yes, we do.
No idea. The same type of truffle that we're familiar with in like amazing French cooking and that sort of thing? Or
no.
Is it completely different?
No,
okay.
It is different.
Okay. Okay.
Because you're talking about the black Gordian truffle of France or the white oak-associated truffle of Central Western Coast. And we don't have those up here, but we do have a lot of different truffles, and they are all edible.
Mm-hmm.
They may not be palatable, but they are edible.
The squirrels like them.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Right.
But what the squirrels eat, oftentimes we cannot eat. And what the squirrels show us that they're eating is important too, because as we've examined fecal material from squirrels by attaching a telonix collar to it, sending it out into the woods, and then tracking the squirrel.
You've collared squirrels?
We have collared squirrels.
I love it. A squirrel with a radio collar on it.
That's right. And it goes beep, 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 beep in the forest. And we follow that little feller, and by gosh, we find caches. And we see dried mushrooms in these squirrel caches that we've never seen before.
So they're foraging them. They're not mushrooms
Absolutely.
Growing in the caches as
no.
a result of they're out there foraging them and
right.
stowing them away like they are the nuts and other things that they want to stow away. Yeah.
And when people are out in the woods, they'll see mushrooms in the limbs of the cone-bearing trees. And those are mushrooms being dried out by the squirrels to cache
really?
To eat later. They love Amanita muscaria. And Amanita muscaria, of which we have seven varieties, are hallucinogenic too.
Huh.
I think squirrels are high all winter long.
Do you think it affects the squirrels in that way?
Yes.
It's noticeable?
Oh, yes.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
They really chatter.
Yeah, they do. All mammals will seek out, including people,
yeah.
will seek psychoactive drug-containing plant tissues.
Yeah. Wow, that's fascinating. Mm. I even as a layperson that knows nothing about mushrooms or fungus and that sort of thing, you know, just in sort of the news and general stuff you start reading, it just seems like we're discovering more and more about that type of, creature, animal, flora. What is the right term? Fungi.
Yeah,
is this whole separate.
So fungi are a separate kingdom from animals and plants.
Okay, animals.
And,
so fauna, flora, fungi.
Yeah, and with the advent of molecular genetics, we found that the animals and fungi are actually very closely related. We're in the same super kingdom, the Opisthokonta.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, wow. So that's fascinating. We're like them.
They're like us.
And they're like us.
Yeah, so we both breathe oxygen and exhale carbon dioxide. That's a similarity that animals have with fungi. Fungi have chitinous cell walls, and chitin's the same thing that insect and crab shells are made of. Let's see what else.
So unlike a plant, we think of it. When I look at a mushroom, I think of it as very looks like, it could be a plant. It's some sort of weird plant.
That's what people thought for a long time, but really, no.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, people used to think they were plants that lacked chlorophyll, but actually they're really close to animals.
Wow.
Yeah.
Totally fascinating. And then the other thing that I was going to bring up is just these kind of almost like Guinness Book sort of things, like the largest living mm-hmm. thing in the world is a fungi, right? Is that
yep,
correct?
It is.
And what is that?
It's called Armillaria mellia. And it's found basically back east, Wisconsin, in that general area. And essentially what happens, the mycelial mass, which is kind of the plant body, which permeates the substrate, covers an area of some 38 acres. So one organism is like 38 acres big.
Wow.
And there's one in Oregon that's now thought to be even larger than that.
And it's just if you take a tissue sample of it 4 acres away from a tissue sample, it's the same actual
– genetically, it's the same stuff.
Same thing,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I heard about that organism that they've estimated it could be as old as 8,000 years old based on how large that mushroom is. And it's a parasite of trees. So it's actually killing the individual trees in that forest, but very slowly so that they have time to regrow.
Oh, wow.
And it's a virulent root rot.
Yeah. Oh, so we would just call it root rot.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. But it ends
but
up being.
But it's a delicious edible.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And does it break the subsurface and sort of what I would call a bloom, which I'm sure is not the correct term, but.
Well, think of a mushroom plant body
right.
like a cherry tree that's underground. And the cherry tree has been pushed up to the surface of the soil and squashed out so it's flat, but it's still underground. Then poop, 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 during the propitious moment, up come the fruit bodies. So it's like picking a cherry off of a cherry tree.
Oh, okay. Those fruit bodies, are they there like fruit to spread seed, but they're spreading spores? Is that
right.
kind of the idea?
It's not a true fruit because fungi don't make seeds. Seeds are much larger and actually have a minuscule plant body within it. Spores are much different. When they germinate, they just produce a hyphal, a cotton-like strand, real thin microscopic strand. Mm. And off it goes.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite mushroom?
No, I don't.
Okay. Do you want to be fair to all in case they're listening?
I do indeed.
You don't want them to get hurt feelings. I get it.
But. My favorite mushroom is what somebody picks up and brings to me, and they're just absolutely ecstatic about finding.
Right, right, yeah. Are there mushrooms in that are of particular interest to you in, for instance, Southeast Alaska that you think, wow, now that's a mushroom that's amazing in this certain way, or it does something very different than others, or it's unusual for this climate, or
The mycorrhizal fungi. It's interesting because if you contrast the sub-Antarctic with the subarctic. And we're a little bit further south than that actually here. But we find that about 99.9% of the mushrooms on those islands are decomposer fungi. And Kristen is going to be talking about the four basic roles that fungi play, mycorrhizae being just one of them, decomposers being another.
Mm-hmm.
No mycorrhizal fungi down there of the type that are so common to us that produce the big mushrooms that we all look for to eat. They have – all the plants down there are mycorrhizal, but they're endomycorrhizal, so you don't see the fruit bodies that form those relationships with the roots in the subantarctic plants. But up here, 45% of the mushrooms are ectomycorrhizal, and they're huge, and we see them. We go out and forage for them every year. You can find two or three good things to eat in the spring, two or three – four things in the summer, two or three or four things in the fall, and you can be consistent and not get into trouble. Ah, but the caveat is don't feed them to somebody else because people's body chemistries are different. And what you can eat, somebody else may not be able to eat. And that's one of the things that we're going to be talking about, isn't it, Jennifer, on Sunday evening at the Cooperative Extension Services, the difference between poisonous and edible mushrooms.
Well, let's get to that. Let's make sure everyone knows where they can hear these folks talk about a fungus among us and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, give me the schedule of everything that's happening.
Okay. Well, yeah. So we're excited tonight at 6 p.m. Dr. Larson and Kristen will be at Amalga Distillery with their books, and it's a meet and greet. So everybody's welcome to come and meet them and chat with them and take a look at the books that they've got. We have mushroom walks on Saturday and Sunday. They are sold out, we do have a class on Sunday at the Cooperative Extension from 7 to 8:30. And so, if people are interested, you can purchase tickets at the door or at tonight's event at Amalga Distillery. We also have a class on Saturday night from 6:30 to 8, which is more of an introduction to the mushrooms of Juneau. And that's also almost sold out. So come see us tonight at Amalga for the most up-to-date information.
Sounds like a good a nice place to meet and greet, and it'll be a really fun really fun time there. Yeah.
Little libation.
Yeah, that sounds terrific. Well, thanks to all of you for coming in and letting us know what you're going to be talking about and talking to us a little bit and educating us a little bit about mushrooms and fungus. It's fascinating to hear about, and thanks for coming in and have a great time maybe discovering even new mushrooms here in Southeast Alaska. Maybe someone will bring you a picture of one you've never seen. That would be really exciting.
Mm-hmm. You never know.
Well, thank you so much. Coming up next, we're going to listen to Bird Note.